It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this Tuesday, the 22nd day of August 2023. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the Great Globe Round. I'll explain why my tongue is wrapped around the stumps of my tonsils here in a moment. And where, if you pop in right now, you will be greeted by early arrivers. I'm late. Theo and Squeaky and Ralphs and Too Much Hutch. That sounds like an Asa Hutchinson reference if I ever heard one, but I don't know. Maybe Too Much Hutch will tell us. Now, hi, I'm Robin. And if you are listening to the podcast, pretty please, whatever platform you listen to it on, whether it be Podbean or Apple Podcasts or Spotify or iHeartRadio or Podcast Republic, I mean, we're on virtually every platform. Wherever you listen to it, though, please give it a like, give it a subscribe, leave a comment for the algorithm, and then after you're done listening, tell your friends and neighbors about it, because this is a brilliant little conversation. 20 years, or nearly 20 years, in the making. Robin, why are you late? Well, I mean, it wasn't that late, you know, 3 minutes. But I was engaging in one of those exquisite late summer rituals. I ran down to the settlements for provisions earlier today, and the folks selling the Mennonite produce were set up by the side of the road. They come over here from Ohio. And they had their assortment of... They had everything but cantaloupes and watermelons. Damn, that's the finest cantaloupe I've ever eaten. Or as the French say, cantaloupe. Now the French don't say that. But I love that little trick, and I was reminded of it earlier today. I was watching a reel somewhere, and for those of us who love corn on the cob, the problem with corn on the cob is always that it's a giant pain in the ass. And boil, you know, you got to shuck it, and you got the silks off, and then you got to boil it, But there's a hack, as the hip kids like to say. You cut the end off of a cob of corn and take the outer shucks off. and like 2 ears of corn. You nuke them for like 6 minutes with the shucks on. And you just squeeze it, and it just pops out of the shucks. The silk is all off of it. And you've got piping hot, late summer, corn on the cob. This happens to be bicorn, bicolor corn. It's yellow and white. I mentioned that to Annette, and she said, really? It's the corn's gotten that way, too? Everybody is. Everything is. But I was lost in a late summer vegetative wonderland because I had gotten that wonderful butter from Greenbrier Dairy, and my corn on the cob was absolutely slathered, and I had just covered it in Old Bay seasoning. And quite honestly, I let time get away from me because I was just... I was lost. And I had freshly sliced heirloom tomato with salt and mayonnaise. Not Miracle Whip. But, oh well. Yes, I did, Steve. What? Did you just call the husks shucks? Yes, one shucks corn. Therefore, the things one is removing are shucks. What? Buckeyes. What's a girl gonna do? That'll bring the Ohio contingent down on me this Titanic Tuesday. But that's why I was late. I was transported. Yeah, okay, if you want to put it that way. Yes, eating fresh corn. Steve in New York says you were having a corngasm. I suppose so. It was, and still, I got a half a dozen ears, and I was late because I was working on ear number two. Sorry. I try not to eat before airtime because, well, it tends to slow me down a little bit, but something, you know, I figured, a couple of ears of corn. You call it corn. We call it maize. So, and I don't feel particularly slowed down, but I am very, very, very happy. That's what I was getting at. Corn on the cob. Oh, honey, you're working too hard. Leave the husk on, throw it in the microwave for 4 minutes, take it out, remove the husk, add whatever floats your boat. I even use a fork, sort of like a lawnmower, and remove the kernels, no stuff stuck in your teeth. Yeah. It's what I did. It's exactly what, because the boiling and the roasting and roasting them on a charcoal grill is gratifying. But it just takes too long. I want my corn. Okay. Well, thank you, Kay. Kay said, they are that insane. This was earlier today. I just heard a political ad for a Republican Senate candidate here in Ohio, and I wish I was making up what the message of the ad was because it's just stupid. It made my brain physically hurt. Vote for Paran, conservative nut job. We'll just give him a name. Vote for Bill Doberman because Sherrod Brown supports open borders and the Mexican drug cartels, which are paid for by the Chinese Communist Party, my friends. No, says Kay, I'm not kidding. I've run out of words. And following up, Ohio contingent here. Kay says, it's not our fault. Our state is so stupid and ass backward. We're completely outnumbered. And also, they're called shucks. Thank you. Thank you, Kay. God bless you for the validation. I mean, if one is shucking corn, what is the thing that it shucks? So that's how this Titanic Tuesday is going to begin. No, it's okay. The Titanic Tuesday began as a day, not in terms of this program, but just as a day. It began giggling, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Lee in New York says, corngasm, and you were grinning from... Oh, Lee! And you were grinning from ear to ear. Lee. You break my heart. I think the llama is moving on one hoof only. But, yeah. Ear to ear. Really should have seen that one coming. God, I love you guys. I can relate. Stephen New York says, my dad, uncle, and I were leaving the Bengals training camp near Wilmington a number of years ago. We stopped by a farm that advertised fresh corn. We stopped and said we wanted a dozen ears. The farmer asked us to wait while he drove the tractor into the field to pick the ears. So, yeah, I get corngasms. Yes, no, they're not called shucks. One picks apples. We don't call them picks. No, we call them fucking apples. God damn, it's not that complicated. Oh, it's okay. Let's laugh now, because there's some serious shit in the stack. Grinning from ear to ear, Lee gets the gnur. Yes, he does. Kay says, stop being so corny, Lee. Oh, God, we need to stop this, don't we? Please, please. Before it gets entirely out of hand. Feel like you guys are stalking me. We need to stop this, Kay. We do. But anyway, like I said, I'm a little ahead of myself because every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And this program is no different. And so, as a consequence, we begin with thanks to our 22nd day of the month subscribers. That means thank you to Cecilia, and thank you to Colin, and thank you to Felicia in Southern California, who I hope is high and dry. Thank you so very much. And so the fundraising goal stands at $1,498. That's basically a week unfunded. That means today, yesterday, Friday, Thursday, Wednesday. Anything we can do to take that down would be fantastic because there are bills waiting to be paid. There always are. And, well, I found out that the wonderful little Mennonite produce stand, they've been setting up on Tuesdays and Fridays for the last, month or so. And they're gone until next year as of Friday, so I have to go over Friday and get whatever I can get. If I had a big chest freezer, I'd have... I love those jade green beans that they've been having. You know, no strings, just snap, pop, yeah. Saving the blind. What about oysters? Dear Robin, you shuck oysters too. All is forgiven, Dave and the Blind. Yes! They're not shucks. You people. Harvest time and edible delights. Theo says, hey lady. Hey Theo. I've been listening to Rhapsodize about corngasm while peeling, paring, and dicing apples in anticipation of apple butter, which my darling Leah makes superbly. Oh, don't get me started. I have, out in the building, haven't used it since the kids were little. I have a copper, huge copper apple butter kettle and the frame and the long, long stirring, because, you know, once you start making apple butter, you can't stop stirring. You got to stir. And you know, you're doing it from, like, 10 feet away. And even then, the heat will get you. And I like clove in my apple butter. It's beautiful how it starts as, you know, apples and down to apple sauce. And then eventually, it, you know, the caramel, the sugars and stuff caramelize and begins to turn that rich, dark, bricky red. I love apple butter. Next come the pears, which come from our own tree. The apples are obtained from a neighboring tree whose branches stretch beyond a fence and into greenbelt land. Either we're going to take them or the local critters will, and they're free. It's time-consuming but delightful. I agree. Oh, a fresh biscuit. Theo, a fresh, hot, out of the oven, fluffy, competently made biscuit, just, and you just pop it, and no, you don't shuck it, and the steam rises, and you put the, and you put the, with the butter and the apple butter. Whew. I'm gonna have to crush and snort on that Foreman just talking about it. That's heavenly. Kay adds, Art of Word Knowing. Now, I guess tonight's show is a lesson of that. Tuned in for politics, but a little bruising, brushing up on English doesn't hurt. Well, as the character says in Dangerous Liaisons, education is never a waste. Let's start with some Latin. For those of you who know, right? Billable Rick. Hey, Billable. Hope you're high and dry. Are Lee and Kay hanging out with Giraffe these days at an undisclosed location? They are very punny today. I know, it's fast and furious. Well, you come from Iowa, Rick. At least you didn't tell me they aren't shucks. So, like I said, it started out with a giggle this morning, Dad. Because, as you recall, we set a little... It wasn't a trap or anything. Hey, guys. But it was more like a... it was a test to make sure that the lines of communication were open. So we talked yesterday about something that has heretofore gone unmentioned by anybody in the multimillionaire for-profit media, and that is the forfeiture aspect of Georgia's RICO statute, whereby Nitwit Nero might lose, oh, I don't know, his rattle-trap jet that I wouldn't fly across a river in. Or maybe even Magaloco or Bed Monster. Remember, it was at Bed Monster where he was flashing around the deeply classified war plan paperwork. and I still think it's a viable theory. And so I put the under at 2 days on it showing up on my Filthy Morning Habit. Y'all know that's just a playful name for what y'all do there at the Morning Zoo crew. Well, they didn't mention it this morning. They'll get around to it. Trust me. But apparently it has to be cleared through. My guess is they're clearing it through the legal eagles, because I wouldn't necessarily trust the. I wouldn't trust the musings of a dumb old hick, ex-country lawyer who falls off the turnip truck every day. So they probably want to run it past the experts, but I feel like they did send a single ping back. Because as I sat there at in the first hour of the program, you know, 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, there he was, that proud son of the Capstone, Joe Scarborough. And he's talking about the Iowa carcasses. And lo and behold, I kid you not, how did it all unfold? He was talking about how the evangelicals in 2016 broke for Nitwit Nero. And lo and behold, he mocked them. He mocked the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christians. How did he do that? Because he said, oh yeah, everybody looked at those Iowa Christians and said, oh, they're so godly, they're so pious and Christian, and no shit. He was doing my cracked voice. This is beginning to happen too many times for it to be a coincidence. So, dude, hey, want to help out keeping the? I mean, we're feeding you some great material. Well, you want to help keep the program on the air, hon? Meet me at Dreamland. Yeah? Mika would be horrified, but look, girl, Mika, it's okay. Just wear something you don't care about. Everybody gets sauce all over the place. Just deal with it. It's delicious. I don't know. Maybe Mika's vegetarian or something. But it was a moment. I'm not kidding. It was. It was. To hear him do that voice. Go figure. Darlene in Connecticut says, oh, ease up, Robin. That rattletrap jet's got 14-karat gold seatbelt buckles. Woohoo! Thank you, you stupid maggots. And he went on and mentioned how, even if they wind up throwing him in jail for contempt, he'll just fundraise on it. And I was sitting there thinking, Joe, you know, wait till the brain trust, the legal department gets done with it, and they'll get back to you and say, yeah, he can fundraise till hell freezes over, and then Fonnie Willis can come and get every penny. I'm sorry, if I'm right, and they've got the starch to do it. Whew! Can you imagine what that would do to the maggots? Marveline, we done sent him $25 a month every week for the last 5, 6, 8 year. And now that now that lawyer in Georgia is going to take every penny of it, and every other loyal Trump supporter in America going to take every damn dime. I'm feeling kind of chumped, Marvelline.
I know, Emery, I told you. But you never listen.
You got to admit, it's kind of gratifying to think about. Oh, Tom and Sonny San Rafael, the Ohio contingent, born but not raised. But Robin, one also shucks oysters, no. But the outer parts are called shells, not shucks. And the outer parts of maize are husks, not shucks.
I guess I'm just a dumb hillbilly girl. I don't think of them as husks until they're dried. You know, all dried out and crinkly and crackly. You know, like, say, maybe in a few years when he's completely lost his mind and when he finally goes to his long and very warm home, we might describe Nitwit Nero as being a husk of a man.
We don't call them pigs. No, we call them apples. Thank you, Tom. Bilbo Ricks is the...
Robin, stop telling us what we can and can't shuck. Neoliberal establishment shell.
Kay says, asset forfeiture. I almost want this more than his orange ass in prison, since the evil son of a bitch had spent his life lying about his net worth and grifting off every fucking thing he can think of and more. Have I mentioned how much I hate the orange asshole? I personally think it would hurt him worse than prison.
Hey. Look, I raised some more money.
And have the hand of Fonnie Willis reach in and say, "Why, yes, you did. Bless your heart. I'll take that." Forfeiture, Trump? What makes you think, at least, what makes you think he has assets? He lied to get on the Forbes richest list. His uncovered tax returns show that he's losing money. He had multiple bankruptcies. He keeps trying to get donors to give. His D.C. hotel was losing money once he left office. He took years to find a second engine for his 737. The assets must have liens. The debtors get paid first. That's true. That's true, Lee. But I don't think it's necessarily true when it comes to government forfeiture of assets used in a criminal enterprise that is the subject of the RICO Act. Lee's a cynic. He says, you know, filthy morning habit. Joe will not admit it. You're Joe's filthy evening habit. Ooh. I never thought of it that way. Stephen New York says, yes, but can we seize his shit if it's Russia that actually owns it all? Yes. Yes. As a lawyer, you must know that there is a procedure within the law of naming stuff as party defendant to a lawsuit. You know, as in United States versus 32 tons of really wet cocaine. Right? I mean, it's out there. Trump's money, Matt in San Francisco says, a black woman taking Trump's money. I'd pay to see that. Wouldn't you, though? I'd even support the state of Georgia running the trial on pay-per-view. I would. I know I've been talking about it day after day after day, and I apologize. But I want a Trump cam. you know, sure, when the witness is on the stand, the witness needs to be being, we need the camera on the witness, panning back to the lawyer for the questioning. We need a camera for the judge, camera on the jury to gauge their responses. But at all times, it should all be done split screen, and the other part of the screen should be the Trump cam to watch him seethe and wiggle and squirm and fidget and turn purple. Do we disagree? It'll be like watching some sort of really obnoxious, long thought, extinct form of vulgar bird. That poops in its own nest. Oh, thank you, Billable. Cowbell for the horn being Joe Scarborough's filthy evening habit. I agree wholeheartedly, Billable. Thank you. Okay, a couple of updates. I told you there's going to be some serious stuff. Oh, wait, one more thing. Scary Jerry says, blatant liberal pornography. Well, okay. Pornography gets a cowbell, Scary Jerry. Hell of a call last night. Weird magical metal cascading breakthrough. Your call made me crave corn tortillas, asking an old crush roommate exactly how they make that in their country. Food is the simple seduction. To a gorgeous, barely English-lingual, recent, gorgeous Venezuelan immigrant, she's always making eyes and gets real red when she sees me and smiles, touching her hair. Context? Well, the context is Scary Jerry is always on the look. She was amazed by soilless growing, actually using the humidity of the air. I didn't have a gun or a lifted truck. I grew a plant, hippie style, low impact, reuse everything. I texted to my sister for my brother, a cure for his kidney stones. That was growth for me. Moving on from the bullshit, not be the cause of them, because I want to get better. Politics, Eastman, discuss, also camera, in the courtroom. Wow. Aw, I see your little hydroponic. That's wonderful, Scary Jerry. Eastman has made bail. And Chenna Ellis, who was shocked, I tell you, shocked, to find out that she was looking up at the underside of a bus. She entered a bail agreement for $100,000. I think she probably had to get a bail bondsman. That means she had to put up 10. And here's the thing. I don't know if y'all pondered this. I'm ponderous, man. Ponderous. It's ponderous, I tell you. Get Don on the phone. Hi, Scott. If these clowns are convicted, and they've already posted some kind of cash bail, Billable, Steve, feel free to disagree if I'm wrong, that money is already in the court's hands. So when the fine is imposed, the fine just comes out of the bail that was already put up. It's kind of like making a down payment on the guilty verdict. Kay says, Fonnie Willis, Trump cam, most of the rage is going to be coming from the fact that a black woman brought the charges that may ultimately cause him to lose his assets and freedom, and I want to see every second of that rage in the courtroom. Talk about poetic justice if and when this happens. Yeah, It's kind of like the opening lines of Johnny Cash's I Walk the Line. I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. Because I want to make sure that I'm not overtaken by the power of the Schadenfreude. Because it's very real. But this is taking on... Well, the first great theater critic, at least in writing that we know of, was Aristotle. He wrote the Poetics. And he talked about things like... The effect that emotions drawn forth on stage had on the audience, with things like the Sophocles's, really? She's already gone to ancient Greece? We haven't even finished the first hour of the program and she's in the ancient world already? Yeah, I mean, why not? Because, for instance, in the Oedipus trilogy, Oedipus Rex, what is it, Oedipus at Colonus, and I don't remember. But the audience sits there and feels the horror, the cathartic horror. But it doesn't always have to be horror. Sometimes it can be a feeling of righteous justification. The thrill of seeing justice finally... I mean, it's a Batman movie. You know, when you finally see the Joker get what's coming, or the Penguin, or Poison Ivy, or
Mr. Freeze,
it's cleansing. That's how it'll feel to us. How it will feel to... How it'll feel to the maggots, I don't know. Fury? Rage? Disbelief? Angst in extremis? Those are all possibilities. Oh, and by the way, Scary Jerry said Eastman, Disgust. And I mentioned Eastman and Jenna Ellis. Gosh, she was such a loyal maggot. But how dim must she be to have never realized that she too would see the underside of the aforementioned bus? That's a lot of dim. Just goes to show, getting into law school, well, it's not always an indication of maximum brilliance. Present company accepted, you know, Darlene, Steve, Bilbo Rick. Y'all are obviously brilliant. Scary Jerry, wait a minute. O.J. Simpson might have a Trump trial watch party. We have reached peak absurdity. There has never been this. Caligula 2024 by Apple TV.
The Trump Trial Watch Party, brought to you by O.J. Simpson. That doesn't sound as absurd as it should. But what I was going to say is that Eastman's entered a bond deal. Jenna Ellis has entered a bond deal. I think a couple of others have. But you know what? None of their bond deals contain specific conditions that they not intimidate or threaten witnesses. That is specific to Julius Geezer. Oh, dear God, I've offended the nerds. Hi, Jeremy. Point of order, Jeremy says, for all the true nerds out there, the real Victor Freeze didn't sound like Arnold. No, but I need every opportunity I can get to do one of my cheesy impressions. That's all. Oh, let's see here. And I mentioned this, we talked about this first last night, or yesterday afternoon, whatever we call it, in the previous program. But the New York Times is out today with an article in which the Times says that Mark Meadows, Christian Republican and minister of the gospel, quote, commenced a delicate dance with Jack Smith's team once he got a grand jury subpoena over the course of the past winter. At first, he tried to stay tough and strong and loyal and tried to run nitwit Nero's claims of executive privilege. I've still got executive privilege. But Jack Smith's guys, Jack Smith's team weren't having it. And they said, listen, we all know he does not, that the privilege goes with the office, not the person. He has no executive privilege. The Biden administration has waived it. And so your refusal to answer based on executive privilege ain't going to fly. And things are going to get real ugly for you real fast. And that's when the New York Times says that Mark Meadows pivoted. I wonder which foot he uses for his pivot foot. Even though he risked enraging Trump, the Times said he decided to trust Smith and quietly made arrangements to have some intimate little discussions with them about both the Mar-a-Lago documents case and everything Nitwit Nero did to try to stay in power. ABC News saying that he had taken the legs out from under Nitwit's claim to have declassified documents with the power of his very big brain. Oh, my God. Joy in Ann Arbor cut me to the quick earlier today with a meme. You know, the big-headed aliens from the menagerie? There's our obligatory Star Trek reference. Someone did a beautiful job of photoshopping Nitwit Nero's goofy mug.
onto one of those aliens, you know, with the silver robe looking real, and the veins and the great big in the great big giant head. And the caption merely said,
"Declassifying."
It's funny if you run across it, I suspect you will laugh merrily for a considerable amount of time. The reporting goes on to note that Trump's gang of pettifoggers, footpads, sycophants, and ambulance chasers is powered primarily by 200-proof paranoia. And now that they've received a discovery from Jack Smith, they know just exactly how loudly, how long, at what pitch, and in what key was the very long aria that Mark Meadows sang to the special counsel. We know how bad it is because Trump spokescreep Steve Chung, when contacted by the New York Times, said,
"This witch hunt is nothing more than a desperate attempt."
Because, see, his spokescreeps have to speak in his voice, too. That's why that's it. Yeah.
"This witch hunt is nothing more than a desperate attempt to interfere in the 2024 election as President Trump dominates the polls and is the only person who will take back the White House."
Bradley Moss, national security attorney, former, said, it's confirmation that under court order, Meadows ratted out Trump to the feds.
"I've said it all along. Snitches get stitches."
Now everybody's wondering if he's got some sort of an immunity deal, and Jack Smith is way too smart to do that. Now, Billable Rick is far more experienced with federal practice, but wouldn't you want to secure his testimony and get that testimony before you ever entered into an immunity agreement with him? And then you do right by him after the trial is over. And they had some fun. Well, not fun, but they had a moment over on My Filthy Morning Habit with the issue.
Former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, who was named as a co-defendant in last week's Georgia indictment, is now asking for the charges against him to be dismissed. In a court filing, an attorney for Meadows claims presidential immunity should shield him from charges that accuse him of taking part in a criminal enterprise meant to illegally change the 2020 election results. He's also charged in connection with a now infamous phone call to Georgia's Secretary of State, where Trump asked the official to, quote, find the exact number of votes needed to overturn his loss there. Last week, Meadows asked for his case to be moved from Superior Court to Federal Court. A hearing on that matter is expected this week, and now he wants them dismissed. Meanwhile, in the separate documents case against Donald Trump, Mark Meadows, has reportedly told investigators he was, quote, unaware and had no knowledge of Donald Trump either talking about or declassifying confidential information that he took from the White House. As ABC News reports, that would contradict Trump's biggest defense in the Mar-a-Lago classified documents case. Meadows' account also seems to be backed up by former Vice President Pence, despite Trump's insistence that he declassified all the materials before leaving office. Pence seems to disagree.
In my case, I was never made aware of any broad-based effort to declassify documents. You know, there is a process the White House goes through to declassify materials. I'm aware of that occurring on several occasions over the course of our 4 years, but I don't have any knowledge of any broad-based directive from the president, but that doesn't mean it didn't occur. It's not something that I ever heard about.
Little helmet-haired
weasel.
Mark
Meadows also reportedly told investigators he was not involved in packing boxes, did not witness Trump or anyone else doing so, and claimed he was unaware Trump took any government records with him. ABC News also reviewed an early draft of the prologue of Meadows' book,
We chatted about this last night.
About his final months in the White House. The book includes a description of Trump having a classified war plan at his office in Bedminster, New Jersey, when he was meeting with Meadows, his ghostwriter, actually, and publicist, but not Meadows himself, which reads, quote, "On the couch in front of the president's desk, there is a four-page report typed up by Mark Milley himself. It shows the general's own plan to attack Iran. Ultimately, the passage did not appear in the book." Meadows reportedly told investigators he asked the paragraph be changed and that it would be problematic if Trump possessed such a document. In a statement to ABC News, the Trump campaign accused the Justice Department of selectively leaking incomplete information that lacks proper...
Would you like more?
Context.
Context, Reverend Al, we can give them more proper context.
Sorry, it's...
So not only...
Shouldn't be funny.
Did more...
Mika. Sorry. It shouldn't be funny. Oh, honey, let it all out. Laugh. Laugh, girl. Laugh. Because... some of this is just, well, it's absurdist humor. Billable Rick says, Trump trial watch parties. Robin, I suspect that Scotty's monkey with the green eye shades working on math problem will also watch the Trump trial. Yeah, maybe even zombie Casey Kasem. Get Don on the phone. Jenna Ellis, Matt in San Francisco, says, there are not many people who, when faced with a decision, think to themselves, what would Jenna Ellis do? No! Oh, I think we're all in rare form this afternoon, aren't we? Okay. Asking to move and dismiss the case at the same time, because that's what innocent people do. Okay, you too. And Mike Pence? Wow, when he's the one talking sense. When Mike Pence is talking sense, there's the first couplet, and that's the A. Now we need the BB. And notes, security threat. Don't forget this among all the charges everywhere. He showed a draft of war plans to civilians at fucking Bedminster. Yeah, he did. And I'm sorry, it becomes... The irresistible urge to speculate about what all this will be becomes a sort of Mobius strip. Because there's something in us that makes us want to... how's he gonna explain that one? Which means, to a certain extent, that we're asking... the larger question, What in God's name is he going to say if he gets on the stand and is subject to a cross-examination? And then we have to sober up and realize that none of his pettifoggers, foot pads, and ambulance chasers, as bad as those lawyers have proven themselves to be over the last couple of years, none of them are dumb enough to let him get on the stand. So the jury is just going to sit there and take in all this information. And I don't think any of those ambulance chasers are particularly good enough to impeach the witnesses. Challenge their credibility.
Well, isn't that secret? Isn't that because you're actually a Democrat participating in the witch hunt?
No, motherfucker, I'm a Republican. I've been a Republican all my life. That's why I went to work for him.
Emilio says, of course the monkey will watch the trial. He's also the defendant. Okay, Emilio. Talosian behavior, not far from the bigly ego, Lee says, from the end of the cage. Vina, he means that they can't use you. You're free to go. Pike. And that's it? No apologies?
Apologies to who? I don't know the guy, Pike. Never heard of him.
Oh, let's see. Where next? Because there's so many possibilities. This is grim. It's one of those moments where you know. I predicted it yesterday. It just kind of makes your stomach turn. Alejandra Carballo, a law professor at Harvard, also a trans woman. She does a really good job of tracking down follow-up information. And yesterday we had the story, the pathetic story out of, Lake Arrowhead in San Bernardino County, California. The guy who was enraged by a cis woman, a shop owner. He was enraged by the fact that she would display a pride flag and ripped it down. And then when she came out to ask him what in the star-spangled hell he thought he was doing, he, a lawful gun owner, pulled out his freedom protector and murdered her. And on air yesterday, I said, well, it won't be long, and we'll find out just which homophobic, transphobic, broadcast bigot he followed. And I specifically named Matt Dysphoria Beard Walsh. And imagine my horror today when our pal Flavio sent me a note. Alejandro Carballo. Alejandra. I'm sorry, ma'am. The bigot who murdered the woman with a pride flag on her business is a Matt Walsh fan. This follows Matt Walsh going on a rant on his podcast saying that, quote, the pride flag deserves our disrespect. Matt Walsh is directly inspiring murder. And terrorism. He is, in fact, a stochastic terrorist. And Flavio and I both agreed that had we not such a misguided view of the First Amendment, Matt Walsh would not get to do what Matt Walsh does. It was back on the 16th of May when Matt Walsh posted, "What Target is doing is far worse than anything Bud Light did. They're selling chest binders and tuck-friendly bathing suits for children." Of course, that turned out to be a... Of course, like I said, entirely a lie.
"Target is calling our bluff, but just like any other company, they need our business. We did it with Bud Light. Now it's Target's turn."
Episode 1128 of Matt Walsh's Hate Fest was titled, "The Pride Flag Deserves Our Disrespect." He should be, but will not be, sued out of existence by the estate of his weaponized terrorists, victims, family. It did not take a magic eight ball with a cracked screen forever displaying answer hazy ask again later, nor a Ouija board to know that that would be forthcoming. All it takes is a working knowledge of the power of hate in this country. And even if one were to successfully sue Matt Walsh for the putrid, vile hate and excrescence that he vomits forth from that cesspit of a gob in the front of his face, he could go before our most puissant dread sovereign, Supreme Catholic Majesties, and say, "But I had a sincerely held religious belief that I hate the queers." And Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas. And Sammy Bad Breath Alito and Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch. And Brett Kavanaugh, who loves beer and mortgages that get paid off and little teenage girls who are passed out after two or three beers. And the handmaid and old balls and strikes.
"Well, that's all right, sugar. Don't you worry. You've got a sincerely held religious belief, so you just call for the murders of all the queers you want. Poor baby.
and the Alliance Defaming Freedom would be standing there right next to him saying, he's got a right to demand murder in this country. Kay says, Matt Walsh, in a sane country, that stochastic terrorist would be locked up for exactly what he is, but this is America. I'm tired of being tired of us being targeted for simply trying to live and actually be protected under the same constitution and laws the people who want us gone claim to love. And since I went there, and since we're already past the first hour of the program, another piece of depressing news, this out of the 11th United States Circuit Court of Appeals. A three-judge panel of that maggot monkey house, the 11th Circuit, overturned the Trump appointee judge's preliminary injunction in Alabama against Alabama's ban on gender-affirming care for adolescents. That's all gender-affirming care. Nobody's doing, we've been over this, nobody's doing genital surgery on 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 15-year-olds, even 16-year-olds. Can't have any of that until you're 18. But they also banned puberty blockers, hormones, therapy, unless it's conversion therapy. Well, that was interesting. Strange noises in the studio. But the interesting thing is that the judge in Alabama made a finding, because you have to make this finding in order to issue a preliminary injunction, that the plaintiffs, the parents in this case, who wanted to have a say in the treatment of their children, the Trump appointee judge said that there was a substantial likelihood that the parents would prevail at trial. He was not wrong. And three maggots from that maggot monkey house in Atlanta, the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, using, I mean, you see this coming, don't you? Using the sophistry from Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health and the Bruin decision in New York last year, overturned that preliminary injunction, allowing the ban to go into effect, declaring that there is no history and tradition in the United States of allowing parents to make decisions about gender-affirming care for adolescents. Of course, there was no gender-affirming care for adolescents in the 19th, 18th, or 17th centuries. There were no biochemistry didn't exist. Trans people existed. Curiosities. Often criminalized. Now, it was just last week
that the Ninth United States Circuit Court of Appeals struck down Idaho's sports, trans sports ban. There will eventually be a split in the circuits which guarantees that all of this, and this is the purpose of it, it's being driven by right-wing AstroTurf groups that want to see these cases go to our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties. God, don't you wish there was a lawyer out there with the guts to say, to stand up and begin their presentation saying, "May it please our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties," and then launch. And because the 11th Circuit has used the language, the approved language used by Fappy Thomas and Sammy Bad Breath, they feel confident that in so doing, they will win. But that wasn't enough for the 11th Circuit, the three madcap maggot panel. I don't know that it was all maggots. There may have been a W appointee, or I don't know, a really ancient one appointed by Pappy Bush. But they went on to say that there is no history and tradition in the United States of America of allowing adults to have gender-affirming care. You see what that little flashing light was meant to signal to places like the Alabama legislature. Not to mention the Alliance defaming freedom. And let's go ahead. The ADF has already, I believe, been noted to be, I mean, I know Moms for Liberty, sit, Liberty, sit, has been designated a hate group. I'd be surprised if the Alliance defaming freedom hasn't also been so noted. And their own leaked emails, the Alliance Defaming Freedoms, makes clear that they were starting with kids because that's where the public sentiment lay. But their ultimate goal was the eradication of trans people nationally in the United States. The elimination of trans people in the United States. And I don't mean just ho-hum, you'll have no rights. I mean dead. The members of the trans community who are part of the Horn Family Community Congregation know this full well. To deny gender-affirming care is a death sentence, especially among those of us who are post-op. Because, for good or ill, like it or not, we all, as human beings, have to have some kind of sex hormone. The fact of the matter is, sex hormones in the human body is the hardware, and sex hormones are basically the operating system. And to deny them is to kill. Those words were chilling. Those words were terrifying. Now, if there's any hope, it is this. As is almost always the case in a hearing before a circuit court of appeals, it begins with a three-judge panel. In this case, it was three wild-eyed right-wing fascist judges. But what follows is always, the losing side always petitions for a hearing en banc. And a hearing en banc means that the entire, every judge in that circuit hears the case and double checks the decision of the three-judge panel. Still, one way or another, it goes to the Supreme Court of the United States, our most puissant dread sovereign, Supreme Catholic Majesties. And so everyone who lives in Florida, Georgia, they recently had their care ban enjoined. Alabama, Mississippi, Stan, Louisiana, Stan. Arkansas's ban got flat out beaten in court, and it's off to St. Louis, and what is it, the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals? It's abundantly clear that every trans person is under attack. West Virginia happens to be in the 4th United States Circuit Court of Appeals, and I'd say there's a decent chance that any similar case would lose there. But again, that just sets up a split in the circuits, and the ultimate goal of outfits like the Alliance Defaming Freedom is met. Get them before the crooks on the court. Crooked Fappy Thomas. Crooked Sammy Bad Breath. Crooked Neil Gorsuch. Crooked Handmaid. Crooked Brett Kavanaugh. Crooked Balls and Strikes. I said a while back that I felt like I'd been granted a reprieve at the end of the last West Virginia legislative session. Kind of feel like that reprieve is on life support. And it was the damnedest thing. While I was out today, these have been absolutely the most beautiful days of summer here. And I just looked everywhere I went and got out and walked around a bit and marveled at the majesty and beauty of this place and felt a love for it that well up from deep inside me. And thought again how much I would hate to leave this place. As fucked up as it is. But that may yet become a necessity. Same damn thing was done to the queer community in Germany, it's being done in the United States.
It's the fascism, y'all. Plain and simple. And I got to thinking about it, and I wondered what the shades of all the murdered queer people from 90 years ago in Germany would do. And I think they'd look at us and chuckle mordantly. Especially at the way that at all the infighting that goes on inside these marginalized communities. As people look for someone to blame inside the marginalized community. And those shades would say, no, dumbasses, it's the goddamned fascists, you twee precious babies. Oh, the things I've seen. Comments like, you know, we were making such progress. I mean, think about Laverne Cox in 2014 and that Time magazine cover, the transgender tripping point, or tipping point. And then the next year, not even a year later, Caitlyn Jenner comes out to all kinds of fawning fanfare. Look at the progress we were making. What happened? And sometimes I'm amazed. You know, there's that old saying out there, you may not be interested in politics, but politics are interested in you. I guess this is the Titanic intellect portion of the program. And unfortunately, it's not Republicans that are being Titanic about it. Because there are hissies being had inside marginalized communities. But if you want to know what happened was the same damn thing that happened in 1933 after a remarkable, albeit brief, golden age of sexual and gender freedom in Berlin. And to be quite honest, 1928 Berlin was probably more queer than the queerest space on planet Earth today. You know, backlash. In the late 20s in Berlin, the head of the Sturmabteilung was swanning around a club in Berlin called the El Dorado, making passes at cute little twinks. And pretty little trans girls. The head of the brown shirts, Ernst Röhm. And then came the backlash. And just for the sake of historical perspective, let's please remember that by the time 2014, the transgender tipping point, and 2015, oh look, we call her Caitlyn now. What had started out in 2009 as the Teabaggers, and before then they'd just been the John Birchers, and before then they'd just been the fucking Klan. Well, they began that metamorphosis in which they changed into what we now recognize as the Maggots. And the sum total of their existence, as they proved in 2017 when they marched in Charlottesville with their tiki torches and their polo shirts and their chinos screaming, "The Jews will not replace us," in a hissy over a statue of a vile old traitorous, treasonous, enslaving, human rights abusing white man named Robert E. Lee. They were brown shirts themselves, a fascist reactionary brigade. But in 2014, they were still looking for a leader, and by 2016, they would find him. But in order to be successful, fascist movements, and I'm sorry, if the ick factor is made, oh, trans, ew. Pretend I'm talking about Jews. Or people of color. Because it's all transferable. And regardless of who their target is, fascist movements always need at least three things. They need an impressionable, ill-educated recruiting base. That also has a contingent of angry young white men. They need money. And regardless of which group you prefer to think of, they need a marginalized, tiny minority group upon whom to project their hate. And so it was that in 2014, 2015, having seethed with knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing rage since that the aforementioned 2009 at the very idea of a black president, by God, they were vibrating like a struck 440A tuning fork. They were soaked in gasoline, wasted from huffing the fumes, and craving someone to strike a match. And Donald Trump struck it, coming down that tacky-ass elevator. Because, you know, fascists always love tacky-ass ostentation. One can be forgiven for thinking it feels like 100 years ago. But then again, kind of is. History may not repeat itself, but it damn sure rhymes. And so at that point in time, they had their shock troops. Whether it was the Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters Executive Staff, or the Proud Boys, or the Free Percenters, or the Oath Keepers, all of that crap. And then, just as Krupps and Fritz Thyssen and other German industrialists financed the rise of the Third Reich, well, American billionaires put up the money to front the American Family Policy Research Council Foundation for Heritage, whatever. And the Alliance Defaming Freedom, and the Thomas More Society, and the Susan B. Anthony Society, etc. ad nauseam. But where the Alliance Defaming Freedom is concerned, that collection of theocratic fascist, I don't know, theocratic and fascist are kind of redundant, really, aren't they? Fascism always leverages authoritarian religious dogma. Well, those pettifoggers went right to work. And they've been intimately associated with attacks on reproductive freedom, Dobbs. On inclusivity in public accommodations, Masterpiece Cake, 303 Creative. And, of course, attacking all things trans. In even the one of the good ones trans.
They funded massive, the billionaires did, massive media outreach efforts. All little Benny Drywife Shapiro had to do was ask for $1 million, and there was an American billionaire, here, have some. All at the same time that other billionaires are buying timeshares in Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas. And so here we are. It's always good to know where you are before you can even know where you want to go. The country is flooded in legislation attacking the rights of women to control the workings of their own reproductive systems. Bills attacking the rights of trans people to merely exist, and it's always focused on trans women. It won't be long until many of us will be standing, usually in some hallowed space, for the Trans Day of Remembrance. And this year, because of the way it happened, this year we'll be repeating the names of the victims at Club Q. If you're trans, you can barely go to the bathroom in public, use a public restroom without fear of being beaten half to death or murdered. And some of those trans people who are murdered are the good ones. And so, I come back to the voices, the shades of those queer people with their pink triangles sewn on their clothing. So many of them murdered 90 years ago. And they're laughing. They're not laughing with us. They're laughing at us. It's the very definition of Schadenfreude. Because while we sit around and pick at each other, we're being picked off. God damn it, it's the fascism, you know? It's the fascism. Just blows my mind. But at least we're standing in front of the sign in the mall that says, you are here, right? Stephen New York said, that decision in the 11th Circuit is so absurd that we're at the ignore the court stage. There simply is no obligation to follow a law that is this level of unjust and immoral. That's all well and good. But in a place like Alabama, ignoring the law costs a doctor her freedom. She loses her medical license and goes to prison and pays an ungodly fine.
if she tries to keep a suicidal trans adolescent alive with gender-affirming care. Oh, and by the way, if... I can't imagine any of us would, but if we do... I'll take one for the team, come on. But at the Clavering rally with the 8 nondescript, indistinguishable people who aren't Trump on stage in Milwaukee tomorrow, lo and behold, all of a sudden I see that this one weird-looking white dude has made the cut. And his name is Doug Burgum. Doug Burgum, Doug Burgum, Doug Burgum, Doug Burgum. Who the f*** is Doug Burgum? Well, Doug Burgum is the governor of North Dakota. And he just signed into law a shit ton of anti-trans legislation. And by God, he thinks that'll really, really get them fired up for him. I swear, I'm behaving myself. I'm trying to do right by my body. But if I'm going to watch this thing tomorrow night, I am strongly inclined to have a bottle of Mexican gasoline and a swirly straw on hand. Because watching this will be digital self-harm for me. Because if it goes the way I expect it to, at the first mention of trans, all those assembled, good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republicans will scream, "Crucify them!" And they'll want to crucify every other kind of queer too. I kid. I'll sit there like Alex from A Clockwork Orange with the little frames on my eyelids and just watch it all in unblinking horror and maybe ask Annette to come over and put a little Visine in my eyes so they won't get all dried out because Visine's got fucking hydrazoline, right? Matt Walsh? John in Central PA says, "I'd like to beat that miserable little subhuman until he begs for mercy." Don't say that. We're better than that. Come on, sing with me, John. "Kumbaya, my Lord, kumbaya, kumbaya, my Lord, kumbaya." Kay says, "Genocide." Hey, guess what? We're there. And yet I can go in trans spaces and find those one of the good ones types. You know, the pick-me girls. "All this talk about a genocide is so overblown. It's hysteria. Some of us just pass and we just fit into society. We're not like those weird ones. And it doesn't matter how hard you try. Sugar, you're going to the camps." Now, granted, once you get there, I expect you to probably start giving blowjobs to try to keep out of the showers for an extra day or so. But you're going too, even though you're one of the good ones. "No, we won't. I swear to God, I've had these conversations." Oh, and I've gone... I'm light on mentioning fundraising this evening. We're at 1498.
Ralph's $200,000 Nitwit Nero bail bond challenge was carried over to today. Oh, no, that got met. That got met overnight. Wow, thank you to an anonymous friend. Yes, thank you. So, Ralph, your challenge got met. Thank you, Robert. Robert just got us down to... So, that gets us down to... 1450. Robert just got us down to 1435. Thank you, Robert. Anybody else want to help out? It'd be great. Phone bill's due on the 24th. It's much less now that I've gotten away from the nightmare that was known as Verizon. But it's due on the 24th. The other half of the power bill is due on the 27th. Same day as the internet bill. Never stops. And I was rather enjoying myself not having to mention it. But with more than half the program gone, I figured I should probably do that. Steve in New York says, honey, a swirly straw won't cut it. You'll need a swirly IV. Maybe I'll do some baby splitting and I won't go with it. Maybe I'll just get some White Claw. It's only got 3 grams of carbs per can. And it's fruity and delicious. I never tasted that stuff until after I started transition and all of a sudden it was like, hey, this is good. Oh. Trans issues, Steve says, this is why I say you should never apologize about bringing up trans issues, because Robin, any non-trans person should realize that the fascists not only can but will come after them. Yeah, yeah. I mentioned that meme yesterday, and I remain impressed by it. First, they came for the transgender community, and I spoke out immediately, even though I'm straight and cis, because I've read the rest of the fucking poem! But remember, and I would be a horrible person if I didn't mention this. Allies always share the burden and the cost. When I first read the story out of what happened in Lake Arrowhead, California, there in San Bernardino County, Once the initial grief had hit, you know who I thought of immediately? Viola Liuzzo. A certain portion of this Horn Family Community Congregation will go, oh yeah! Another portion may take a minute and say, Viola Liuzzo. Viola Liuzzo. Why does that name seem so familiar? Viola Liuzzo was a white woman who came down from Michigan to Alabama because she was profoundly moved by the injustice of Jim Crow. And deeply inspired by the civilly disobedient uprising taking place in Selma. And she came down and she said, let me do whatever I can do to help. And one night, on a lonely road,
down in the short grass prairie areas of Alabama. Driving in a car with some civil rights activists. Klansmen pulled up even with her and blew her brains out as a race traitor. So this is one of those say her name moments. The same way we remember Viola Liuzzo. Let's remember Lori Carlton. Lori Carlton. Laura Ann Lori Carlton, who had lived 66 years on this planet. Was murdered for all intents and purposes on the orders of Matt Walsh. And I have no doubt whatsoever that that motherfucker grinned and giggled and cackled and laughed out loud when the news broke. Served her right. Sex traitor. What did I say a few minutes ago? The maggots came from the teabaggers. The teabaggers came from the John Birchers. And the John Birchers came from the Klan. And they are all fascists. You know, I kind of wish the cops hadn't blown her murderer away, Lori Carlton's. Her store, Magpie, had rainbow bunting along the roof line, one Pride Progress flag hanging from a pole at the center of the store, and green and growing and blooming and living things planted in galvanized zinc troughs. It just looked like a happy place. Cedar Glen was the location. It's about 80 miles by car east of L.A. The cops, like I said, blew away her assailant, Travis Ikaguchi. Stood and screamed a stream of homophobic slurs at her. As well as making disparaging remarks about the Pride flag. She worked closely with a group called Lake Arrowhead LGBTQ+. And gave money to help keep them going. Over at the Human Rights Campaign, Kelly Robinson, the president there, said the LGBTQ plus Americans are living in a state of emergency. The multiplying threats facing millions in our community are not just perceived. They are real, tangible, and dangerous. This is Governor Gavin Newsom said this is absolutely horrific. This is disgusting. And that phrase drives me batshit every time some politician says it after an event like this. Hate has no place in California. Gavin, I love you, honey, and I hope you're president one of these days, but I hope you'll wise up enough to never say something like that again, because when shit like this happens, it is obvious and prima facie proof that it does have a place there. It's alive and it's well. And the only way to make sure that it has no place there is to suppress it ruthlessly, efficiently, and with extreme prejudice. But yeah, Travis Ikaguchi, when the cops showed up, he squeezed off a few rounds at the cops. And, you know, cops just don't like that. And I hate, oh my God, I know why this crap gets printed. I know why it gets written, but it still goes through me like a dose of salts. At the end of the story, there's a quote. From the sheriff of San Bernardino County saying, investigators are still investigating the motive in Carlton's killing. Really? I wonder if they'll... Well... wonder if they'll get around to noting Matt Walsh, maybe. Ikaguchi, according to the CNN report, who lived in Cedar Glen, had social media accounts containing anti-LGBTQ plus and anti-law enforcement material, sheriff officials said in a news conference late on Monday. He was active both on derpy Batman villain Leon Scum's site, not to mention Gab, a messaging platform used by fascists. He had one account on that platform owned by derpy Batman villain Leon Scum, and the pinned post was a burning pride flag. They're still investigating a motive. And going back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the program, a note coming from Mark in Florida, well-trained and up to speed. Good man, Mark. Jack Smith reveals Trump employee flipped after ditching MAGA lawyer. Funny how that happens. Remember how Cassidy Hutchinson flipped after ditching her maggot lawyer? Once you realize that you're going under the bus, a certain amount of self-preservation dictates that one try to avoid that. Well, damn, 2 hours of the program gone, and I got somebody sitting on the stress line. I had to deal with that. Sorry. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Rob.
Hey, Dave.
I think the thing is we should not have any shucks to give.
Well played.
We should just, and on behalf of my company, when the maggots are off,
Dave, are you having phone problems? Dave hung on. I hope you call back, Dave. Ralph said, in regard to Lori Carlton's store, I really hope someone takes over her store, her business. Well, she has a daughter, so maybe that can happen. Did you notice how in the CNN report, Matt Walsh's name appeared nowhere? Yeah. Because, well, Matt Walsh could never have foreseen that spewing hate against a marginalized group day after day after day after day could possibly ever result in someone picking up a gun and going and murdering someone. Yeah, because Bernie Goldberg said that. Rush Limbaugh said that. Hannity said that. Glenn Beck has said that. Because they've all inspired killers. And they get to sit behind their microphones like a dragon sitting on its hoard of millions. And chuckle at what they've done. Oh, by the way, just in case anybody's wondering, Matt Walsh is very serious about what a good, good, good Roman Catholic he is. In case you were wondering. Are you back, Dave?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay.
I'm sorry about that, Robin. I don't know what happened.
Well, don't worry. Don't beat yourself up.
But, no, I wanted to let you guys know that we at Crazy Days are not going to be crucifying any trans folks or anybody else that doesn't specifically sign our waivers. And the only people we cater to, as far as crucifixion clients, are those that wish to jump up on the crosses themselves. Well, and that tends to be your maggots.
And you do rent the obligatory pogo stick, right?
By the hour, yeah. Because, you know, you get some fat conservative. It may take him a bit to jump up on that cross. So we have a cherry picker standing by for those of a more rotund nature that just can't quite use the pogo sticks.
Do they get a nail gun?
No. However, we've gotten a couple new Goliath 3000s. I told you about the Alien cannon that we bought that kind of shoots to the right. We now have the fat cannon. So, like the Jack Spratt nursery rhyme, we can nail you in with some fine nursery rhymes or poetry or couplets, or hell, if you pay us enough, we might even come up with a limerick or three.
Iambic pentameter?
Well, you know, we'd have to get our chimpanzee staff working on that. You have to call about a year ahead to get anything like that done. But you know, we're joking about shucking and things like that. That is a term in marketing. To go through like a client list or a potential client list, and to you get no after no after no. You might go through 10 or 12 of them just to get one yes. Well, if there isn't a better shucker around these days than Donald Trump, he's been shucking these people for years.
Truth.
And now that I heard that Joe Scarborough is doing a Trump impression, that means there are four people I know that do Trump impressions. And that would be you, Alec Baldwin, Joe Scarborough, and Donald J. Trump. He kind of reminds me of those 70s bands that you loved in the 70s and the early 80s and now are just a poor garage band shadow of themselves. You know,
those bands that you loved in your adolescence, and you're like, you hear it and you're like, the fuck? I had one of those moments the other day. I just had a playlist going randomly, and I'd gone into the kitchen for a second, and I came back here to the studio. And I hear, oh, mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long... And at about the same time that the band yells no, I yelled no and hit next. Styx was like, so cool, Dad. No, they really weren't.
I'm sorry.
They weren't. They weren't really cool.
Well, I mean, Donald Trump and his minions remind me kind of, you know, White Snake. You know when they had all big stadium the pyrotechnics in the bar, the pyrotechnics that were designed for stadium shows.
Yeah, where they set fire to the bar
and killed their drummer. Yeah.
Oh, that wasn't White Snake. Who was that?
Was that Poison? It was either White Snake.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't White Snake, and it wasn't Poison. No, it was. It was a much more. Even more metal. The Heavy Metal Research Department will come up with that. The guy was much mourned. All of a sudden, sitting there talking about Styx, though, all of a sudden, Matt in San Francisco and Air Supply came to mind. It's like, God, Matt, I'm still grieving for you, honey.
I just, you know, it's bad.
But you talk about maggot music. You talk about maggot music. Nah, not Def Leppard. Wasn't Def Leppard, Darlene. January 6, 2021, Annette saw the coverage. You know, the maggots, I mean, you know, the Trump family, had a big party tent set up for January 6th. Annette was there was a smorgasbord and everything, but Annette was horrified because at one point the camera panned over to Kimberly Gargoyle, and she was like boogieing, and moving from one room of the tent to the other. And I mean, you know, she was getting, you know, she was just really into it. To Laura Branigan singing Gloria.
Oh, my God.
And Annette was so offended. She's like, I love Laura Branigan. How dare that bitch? And you can add, she'll still talk about it to this very day.
I'm with Annette on this one. How dare that bitch? Exactly. Laura Branigan is great. But, no, the thing is, he's going to post his $200,000. And he's going, you know, as sure as the sun rises in the east, that he is going to violate the terms of his bail. And he's just daring these judges, just goddamn daring them to put him in jail. Because then he can be the persecuted one. You know. And then there's going to be a great big order down at the shop, getting the executive special, you know, for the crucifixion scene. They've got Donald Trump in the middle, and as the two robbers, they've got Steve Bannon and Rudy Giuliani on either side. I don't know which one would be considered the good thief. But, I mean, I'm all for the increase in business, Robin, but damn. Which reminds me, I have a bit of sad news. Because a certain former president of my acquaintance had been trying to break into my liquor cabinet. I had to move it into the office down the shop. Well, as you know, Donnie's boy Eric has been sweeping up around the shop and running errands for Gladys and whatnot. Well, he came in the other day crying, and Gladys asked him what was wrong. Evidently, his daddy had asked him to break into my liquor cabinet when I moved it into my office, and he didn't want to steal from me. So we got him calmed down. Gladys gave him a couple of her famous rum raisin oatmeal cookies. But I mean, this guy will use anybody. I mean, just anybody. So I don't know why these charged co-conspirators are so shocked that they're seeing the undercarriage of heavy equipment, because he's a fucking snake.
Willful denial.
Oh, I didn't know anything.
It was,
know,
oh,
like,
by the way, the band was Great White.
Great White, okay. Well, they weren't, I mean, it's like a dozen people died in that fire. Who the hell was the genius that told them, oh yeah, the way to get back on top is use stadium pyrotechnics in a bar?
Oh, and thank you to Jimmy in the Great Northwest, serving as the Horn Pyrotechnic Bar Fire Research Department.
Thank you, Jimmy. I appreciate it. But that's what these guys remind me of. And do you realize now my Christmas list is done? All I have to do is buy a couple of pillowcases, and I can go, well, now I'm
getting okay, you don't just get to say that, no. Why the pillowcases? Damn it, Dave. I know a setup when I smell one coming.
why the pillowcases? Well, Robin, you know, since my dad and my brother and my nephew are all maggots, I can end up handing them, well, here's your hood. Here's your hood. And I can reassure my dad that, well, membership has been rather low, so the Klan has been allowing Catholics into their ranks now. So he can be just as hateful as he wants to be.
Oh, Jesus.
There's his hood.
Membership's down, so they're letting Catholics in.
Oh. No, they are. That's not a
joke. I'm sure that's true. I have no reason to doubt that.
There are Catholics in the Klan. Yes. I find that the goddess of irony has them firmly in her loving clutches.
Generations of dead exalted cyclopses are rolling in their graves.
Exactly, Robin. Exactly.
Oh, thank you for taking me out of that dark place where I was and giving me a giggle.
Well, I'm glad I could be of help, Robin, you know. And folks, it's not just a two-joke minimum here at the Horn. And please tip your hostess. She works hard.
Bless your heart, and don't try the veal.
Yeah. Not the smoked brisket? Okay, we can deal with that. But
we'll shuck you some oysters and a couple of ears of corn.
Right. But, no, and here's a little bit of word knowing that most people don't know. I actually looked this up. If ruthless is to be without pity or compassion, well, what does it mean to have ruth? Well, I looked it up, and a ruth is another word for compassion. So when you hear, oh, he's a ruthless businessman, what they're really saying is he's a businessman who has no compassion. This is the guy that will run you down, back up the car, and run you back the other way. But you're not going to get these guys to change their minds.
No, a certain number of them are just lost causes. And they need to be suppressed.
There was a gentleman here in Indianapolis. During World War II, he was one of the boys, and I do mean boys, that Hitler had guarding his bunker. Outside his bunker. It took the Russians like 4 hours to convince him they weren't going to hurt him. His name was Mr. Vogel, and Mr. Vogel wrote a book, and he said, and this is in the 1970s, he goes back home to Germany to visit family members. And he said he got disgusted when they started pining away for the good old days when Adolf was in charge. Now, I can sympathize with Mr. Vogel in that he'd been put in a situation that could have cost him his life. And he eventually made his way to the United States and he goes home to visit the family, and they're talking about the good old days of Adolf Hitler in the 1970s. And the thing is, by that time, there were laws in Germany that made that illegal. Made that kind of stuff illegal, kind of talk illegal. You can't give the Nazi salute in Germany without getting put in jail.
or display the flag.
And for all these,
and you know, it's worth remembering that it's illegal to display the Hakenkreuz in Poland, and so that's why when Julius Caesar, when Julius Caesar visited Poland, they all showed up and waved Confederate flags, because everybody understood that they stand for the same thing.
Right.
Oh, and I should note just a couple of notes. Matt in San Francisco said, subject line, Dave, may the words Donald Trump and Whitesnake never be mentioned in the same sentence again. Amen, Matt. Amen.
I fully agree, Matt. I regret the error, but these guys, they're unrepentant, racist, they're unrepentant bigots religiously. I mean, you go into any Assemblies of God church in this state, and you'll hear them talking badly about the Catholics the time they were trying to repeal Roe v. Wade. They were trying to get it overturned. The divisions are there. And they're coming home to roost, Robin. That's what you're seeing now, Mike Pence. You know, staunch convert from Catholicism that he is. It doesn't matter if you hold yourself out to be some paragon of conservative Christian virtue. I would remind you that there was another political party that referred to itself as conservative and Christian. And there was a point in time when a gay man almost took over the party. Ernst Röhm was actually being considered as a successor if anything had happened to Adolf Hitler.
Well, and that's, I mean, ultimately, on the last day of June 1934, Ernst Röhm met his end, because what had developed was a power struggle between the SS and the SA. And Ernst Röhm had asked for the SS to be placed under his command. And so then and it's not like I'm defending him, but that is when Himmler began a campaign of smearing Röhm as a deviant, and began hollering that Germany must be purged of sexual deviance. And the next thing you know, the Institute for Sexual Study was up in flames.
In Berlin.
And the first those black and white films of Nazis burning books and papers. That was the vast collection of gender and sexuality research at that clinic. And to this day, we still don't know what we lost.
And it's how, I mean, I understand human beings have a strong psychological capability of ignoring what they don't want to look at. But I'm wondering why you know, for all these right-wing douchebags who go, well, you can't legislate his speech, you can't legislate this, you can't legislate that. There is nothing under the sun of God's heaven that you cannot legislate. There is no right in the Constitution of the United States that doesn't have laws enabling them to be enforced. There is nothing in this country that says that all speech is protected. It doesn't say that. If they'd wanted to say that, they could have said that. But not even those pasty-faced white guys who were setting up the Constitution would even think of such a thing. You know, not all speech was considered the same. There were great stratifications in society, economically, religiously, politically. It wasn't until Andrew Jackson exploited the populist sentiments that you had the political parties coming into sharp focus. I mean, you had backbiting.
Well, that was the era of the Whigs and the Jacksonian Democrats. I mean, there was pretty sharp focus between the Federalists and Jeffersonian Republicans too.
It wasn't what Madison had thought.
Oh, no, Madison in Federalist 10 loses his absolute shit talking about the dangers, the dangers of faction. But the thing is, Federalist 10 is a fascinating read because he starts out declaiming against faction and then ties himself in pretzel knots trying to say, well, you know, I guess it's going to happen, so it'll probably be... No, it'll be all right. Just please ratify the Constitution. It'll be okay. I mean, and he talks about how there are ways in which faction can work when natural allies join together, you know?
But the thing is, Robin, he was right in noting that the factionalism was going to happen. We didn't, for all the idealism of that period, we didn't get away from that. I mean, remember, the reason the Constitution was even envisioned was that the Articles of Confederation allowed for a great deal of democracy to be breaking out. We just couldn't have that. It's like if you want to argue and talk about presidents of the United States, remember John Hancock was president of the United States 3 times because under the Articles of Confederation, the president only served a 1-year term.
Yeah, true.
I mean, yeah, he could run for as many times as he wanted, but he was president of the United States. George Washington was not the first president of the United States. and this term of father of the country. Well, no, he was the winning general of the country. He was also...
Well, I mean, honestly, I guess what? In the last 2 months, I've started referring to the people who framed the Constitution as those drag queens. Well, if you want to talk about father of the country, the United States has two daddies. Madison and Hamilton.
Well, we should just take the Constitution out of every library. You know what?
Oh, that's hilarious. Oh, my God. Look at that door you opened, Dave. The Constitution of the United States must be removed from schools in Florida under Don't Say Gay because the Constitution has two daddies.
Ta-da!
Huzzah!
Do you think when Madison finally got in the White House, he put a little disco ball in the East Room or something? Yeah. We're having a ball down at the Executive Mansion. Oh, really? And every one of them shows up. Oh, I could just see it. You know, there were those who wondered whether Trump would paint the outside of the White House gold and, you know, put up a big Trump resort sign on the East Lawn. How in the world people could follow a guy like this, I don't know, but having studied the closest equivalent to Trump's governing style that I can, and that would be Germany's Third Reich, the one thing fascism that you didn't mention has to have in order to grow is to have their opponents at each other's throats. I mean, in Germany, it was the communists and the trade unionists against the social democrats and the Christian democrats. You know, there were accusations that the trade unionists were anti-Christian, and in Germany, especially with the Lutheran Church, that was a way to mobilize the more conservative elements. The when they did stand for election, I think it was the highest vote tally that the Nazis got were 42% of the Reichstag. They were in a coalition government.
Yeah, it's proof positive of the dangers of a plurality, Dave. And we don't have to cross the Atlantic to see an example of that. Look at Prohibition. Prohibition was not. Did not become a part of the fabric of this nation with a majority. Never was. It was a plurality. It was a bunch of noisy people in state houses who bullied and cajoled and browbeat legislators into affirming the amendment or ratifying the amendment.
It
required 2/3 of the states, but the actual people who were prohibitionists were never anything near a majority.
No, they were a well organized
plurality.
And they were organized by people who had the time to do it. Wealthy women who were out to reform the nation. They were going to get rid of drunkenness and save the family. You hear this kind of language over and over again. There's a reason why the right wing side, the right wing's answer to Emily's List is the Susan B. Anthony Society, or whatever they're calling themselves. Because, and I find it ironic that they would choose Susan B. Anthony as their head, considering how controversial she was in her lifetime. She makes Camille Paglia look like a kindergarten teacher.
Oh! Wow, it's been a while since we've had a Camille Paglia reference. She's awful.
Wow. I'm digging deep in the well of the night, Robin.
I understand, Dave.
But we cannot, as progressives or liberals or however we identify ourselves on the not right-wing side of life, you know, normal people, we have to beware of ridiculing the other side as stupid or as disorganized, because they're not. They've had 70 years of organizing. They've been organizing since the end of World War II. I mean, this whole, the idea that communism was the existential threat to democracy, when the American Communist Party in the late 40s only had like 5,000 members. There was no way 5,000 members could take over an entire government. But if you wanted to criticize your opponents, you could call them a filthy communist. And they
some
did,
things never change.
And still do. And they've been doing, you talked about the queer folks from 90 years ago who were murdered. Well, who else are the right wing in this country holding up as whipping boys for, or straw men is disabled people. Oh, the Americans with Disabilities Act will end the Republic. I remember, you know, Rush, I Love Pineapple Limbaugh, you know, castigating the Americans with Disabilities Act. And I'm thinking to myself, well, Rush, it's protecting your job because you're obviously mentally intellectually disabled, and they still let you blather on the air. It's as long as you agree with them, they're your bestest friends until they can find a way to stab you in the back. And on our side, we like to play too nicely. You know, I think there's a danger in holding ourselves out as morally better than the other side. Because when push comes to shove, there are going to be more than a few of us that shove back. And I'm in no wise saying that's going to turn violent. I think violence is a cost. You risk everything when you go violent. I mean, I understand all these godforsaken mass shooters who are obviously no account liberals, if you would hear the for-profit media talk about it, because they never say, well, these were followers of Donald Trump. No. I mean, there are now four people who do imitations of Trump. That'd be you, Joe Scarborough, Alec Baldwin, and Donald Trump. So, I mean, you look at him from interviews in the 80s, he doesn't look nearly as wild-eyed back then as he does now. He could actually speak in complete sentences relatively coherently. You know, I think you're right. I think when he got in the White House, Ronnie Jackson said, here, Mr. President, this will pep you right up.
Oh, yeah. Hmm.
I mean, he's Vice Admiral Feelgood, isn't he?
I thought he was Reichsfeldmarshal Feelgood.
Well, that could be, but we know what happened to Reich. What was it I said there? I was only following orders. Defense died at Nuremberg.
Yeah.
They didn't have a jury, but they were. They didn't have a hung jury because they didn't have a jury, but they were hanged.
Yes. Oh, and yeah. I had a, you know, I forget who was talking, but and it happens every time I hear it. You know, little grammar gremlin that I am. Well, I had a clip yesterday of Nicole Wallace. I think it was said. Was hung, and I can't help myself. It's like a tick for me. Hanged. leave your proclivities and peccadillos at home. Hanged. I think I come by it honestly though, Dave, because my father was kind of quirky. And, for instance, I think I've mentioned this before, in a book of matches, you know how each row of matches is in an offset with the previous row?
Uh-huh.
Well, my father always started at the beginning of the matchbook. Nothing just got all over him more than just somebody randomly reaching into a matchbook and pulling out a match. They're in there in an order for a reason. I think the German side of me comes down. My father said, right, so you start at the indentation on the front row, you go across, then you come back across the indentation the other way, then back across, and then back. And once you get to the back row, though, there was a different rule. You start with the indented side. The next match you take out is the far end on the other side until you are left with the middle match on the back row, and that's the last match. I don't know where he picked it up. But
if somebody just randomly went in and grabbed the match out of the middle of the row,
drive him batshit.
That would just drive you
batshit. Batshit. Absolutely batshit. and being an old
son. Would he have to get rid of the book of matches or something?
Yes. Or at least pull all the matches until they got in proper order.
Oh, okay.
Dudes that he worked with on the furnace used to fuck with him. There may be,
as people at work will do. Yeah.
There may be a little neurodivergence running down that side of my family, and I got it, and I picked it up off him. It made perfect sense to me while I was still a smoker. But we were talking about hanged versus hung. He was an old salt World War II sailor, and if somebody said lit, the next word out of his mouth would be lighted. The smoking lamp is lighted, not lit. And the other thing that drove him
an old sailor, and he knew the proper term.
And the other thing that drove him up a tree was someone talking about tying their shoes, and he would always respond, "Well, this I gotta see." I have yet to see anyone tie shoes. There's just too much shoe there. They're too stiff. They will not tie. And so from a tender age, it was, you tie your shoelaces, not your shoes. You can't tie shoes. And again, it stuck.
Yeah,
and so once I finally got, just a couple of months back, once I finally got my 23andMe, I found out some interesting things. I thought I had a bunch of Welsh in me. I don't have a lick. I am painfully English, with a mixture of Irish. The rest is Irish and Scots and German. And a little bit of, I am the Swiss Miss. Gave me a lot of, that was gratifying. Hey, look, I'm the Swiss Miss with many marshmallows. The German part comes down my dad's side, and I don't know, maybe all that attention to detail.
Interesting thing happened when we got a Ancestry.com test kit. My brother and I took one each, and my sister took one, and we got our percentages back. And my brother and I pretty well matched up as far as percentages of who went from where. But my sister has 1% Spanish that does not show up in my brother or me. And I thought to myself, well, that's interesting, because the joke was that we were waiting to see from what planet my ancestors came from. They're like, well, obviously, you're not mom and dad's kid. You got to be somebody. Did somebody just drop you down here? That kind of thing. But no, it turns out that I'm from all over Europe, mostly from England and Scotland, but 8% of me is Norse. Which would probably explain why I like traveling so much. But, I love when they do those DNA tests, those deep dive tests on clansmen, and they find out, like, they've got 4% African ancestry. And they just lose their shit. So, yeah. But I think the greatest thing was when Trump and Pence got into the White House, people started donating money to Planned Parenthood on behalf of Mike Pence, and they wanted them to send him a thank you note. And so much so that finally Pence complained about it, and Planned Parenthood agreed that while they would accept the donation, they would not send him any further thank you notes. But we've got to needle these guys somehow. We got to get under their skin. This little parade of buffoons tomorrow, I hate to say it, Robin, politics is not nearly as fun as it used to be. I used to watch the Republican debates just so I could throw popcorn at the TV screen.
Right, and now you've moved on to bricks.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't want to keep going through television, so I'm not going to be. I'm not going to be partaking of.
Well, thank God the prices have come down, right? You can pick up an 85-inch TV for under $1,000 now. Well, I mean, you can purchase one. I couldn't pick one up for love nor money right now. Well, yeah. By the way, I want to shift gears for just a second, because we're closing in on the end of the program, Dave. And I always like to end the program, especially when I've gotten a little bit heavy along the way, with a giggle. We started out early in the program talking a bit about Mark Meadows, who appears to be rolling, keep that witness rolling, Meadows. Sorry, couldn't resist. And before I go there, I got a cowbell from Matt in San Francisco. Hanged. Matt says the difference between a guy who's hung and a guy who's hanged is luck. Hey! Ooh, yeah.
Oh, that deserves a cowbell.
Yeah, a little louder one, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know why tonight is tell stories about my dad night, but he said he knew an old man when he was young who said his ambition was to be executed at the age of 99 for soliciting prostitution. I did that wrong. No. He wanted at the tender age of 99. He wanted to still be hung and be hanged for soliciting prostitution. It was a hung, hanged thing. You know, I fucked it up. But,
right.
But no, a happy story. A happy story. Wait a second, just one. John in Central PA, let me answer this real quick because you're here and you may have something to add. Subject line, Hamilton. You mentioned Hamilton, and I figured I'd take the opportunity to ask about something I've been wondering. I'm by no means a Hamilton stan. It's taken me a while to figure out what stan meant, but I'm there. But I seem to hear a lot of people talk about Burr sort of favorably, but wasn't Burr one of those Manifest Destiny weirdos? Filibusters, I think they were called. He allegedly planned to invade some land with James Wilkinson. And you know what he was accused of? At the same time, though, Burr was kind of progressive on some issues, if you believe him, about his positions. I'm a Burr heretic. I think that Burr was the necessary bete noir of Thomas Jefferson, because Thomas Jefferson was pissed at him because Burr would not stand down in the election of, what was it, 1802? And made the House of Representatives go through like 25 ballots before Jefferson became president, when one side broke. And Jefferson never forgave him for it. And then when Burr was vice president and served as
president of the Senate. He actually presided over the first impeachment hearing of a member of the Supreme Court. His name was Chase. And the House had impeached him because basically they didn't like his politics. And the trial came over in the Senate, and Burr, even his political opponents said, ran an absolutely flawless, fair, brilliantly administered trial. Aaron Burr remains probably the youngest and most brilliant graduate ever at Princeton University, then the College of New Jersey. I visited his grave when I was in Princeton, because he was turned into the American Satan for the sake of Thomas Jefferson. Wilkinson was the great traitor of his time. Wilkinson was in the pay of the Spanish crown, John. And Jefferson knew or should have known at the time, but overlooked it, and Wilkinson, trying to cover his own hide, tried to lay it all off on Burr, that Burr was going to attack the United States and wanted to be the king of America, and just a bunch of made-up horseshit. What we do know about Burr...
I think that's where the story about him joining a group in Mexico he was allegedly gathering an army in Mexico to invade the United States.
But he never made it to Mexico.
Yeah.
What they do know,
what we do know
is that he was planning on leading a group to colonize the Ouachita River Basin in the Louisiana Territory, which I think would my Arkansan friends can tell me. The Ouachita River goes from Louisiana or flows from Arkansas into Louisiana or vice versa. I think it's Arkansas into Louisiana, but they were going to dispossess some indigenous people, and they came down the Ohio River, got on the Mississippi. He had a meeting with Harmon Blennerhassett, who had built a mansion on an island in the Ohio River, right off from where is now Parkersburg, West Virginia. It's a fascinating place to visit. But Harmon Blennerhassett did that, getting as far away from civilization as he could, because, you know, he'd married his sister. Or his niece, or something like that. I think it was his niece. And so...
your real family value kind of guy.
Well, yeah. But it's still known as Blennerhassett Island. And
how the hell did he marry his sister? He obviously.
I think it was his niece, but still creepy.
Okay.
I think he was Scots Irish. But Jefferson concocted a scheme, this vast conspiracy story against him, in order to make himself look better, as you know, kind of the way that Cicero built the case against Catiline so that he could be called the savior of the republic. But as to manifest destiny, yeah, there were a lot of people prattling about how the United States needed to invade Mexico, make it an American colony. And this shit persisted for 100 years and more, with, like, defeated Confederates going to Brazil. And Flavio has talked about it at length on the program, and setting up a little slave system in Brazil. So, on the other hand, Hamilton was a piece of shit. Hamilton was, I mean, they were both great lawyers, Hamilton and Burr. Hamilton married into the Schuyler family, which was one of the two great families in New York at the time, and it was at a political dinner in Albany where apparently things had been simmering for a while. Ultimately, though, word got back to Burr that Hamilton had said something so absolutely scurrilous that Burr felt like he had no choice but to call him out. And so they met together on the plains at Weehawken, which is now, there's a memorial on a cliff overlooking a four-lane highway at Weehawken. The actual duel happened somewhere under the asphalt of the highway, but the memorial is up higher, and Hamilton met his end. Hamilton was always intensely jealous of Burr because Hamilton wanted to go to Princeton, but knew that he could never best Burr's records, so he went to New York and went to Columbia and basically set all the records at Columbia that Burr had set at Princeton. And
so
Burr was academic jealousy? Yeah, it is. It's pure jealousy. Hamilton served on Washington's staff and hung out with all the pretty boys, and there's some evidence to suggest that he had a tryst with one of the other staff members who went on and then got himself tragically killed or died of disease.
Oh, I thought you might have thought...
Meanwhile, Burr actually soldiered and led an invasion of Canada through what is now Maine and damn near froze to death doing it, but actually got all the way to his objective. But all of that gets buried in the business with Wilkinson and Wilkinson's cipher. The other thing, though, is that Burr was, by all accounts, an absolute ladies' man. He was faithfully married to his wife, who became ill and became bedridden, at which point Burr did what any... I'm not justifying it, what any man of the late 18th century would do, and he found other companionship. And had no problems getting laid, whereas Hamilton got catfished, to use the modern parlance, Hamilton got catfished by a woman who came and said, "I'm on the streets, Mr. Hamilton, and I have no recourse." In whatever the New York accent was of the time. "Could you... I know you're a married man, but you're also known for being so kind. Please, could you give me a little bit of money in exchange for me letting you fuck my brains out?" To which Hamilton replied, "Why, yes, my dear, I will shtup the lights out of you. Here's some money." And then her husband showed up and proceeded to blackmail the bejesus out of Hamilton.
Yeah. Gee, I wonder why he would do that.
So
sounds like a bit of a setup.
I mean, frankly, you given a choice between the two, I'll take Burr any day of the week.
Well,
I wanted to answer John's question, but because time is short, like I said, I like to end on a happy story. Mark Meadows still thinks he's quite special, and so he doesn't want to post bond in Atlanta, Dave. He's above all that.
Well, why?
He's moved the case over to federal court, because he says he was only following orders and he was acting in the course and scope of his government employment and trying to overturn the election. And so he don't want to post bond. And his pettifogger reached out to Fonnie Willis and said, "We don't want to post no bond. What are you talking about? Wait a minute. What's her last name? What are you talking about, Willis? Sorry." In case you were wondering, in the context of this long-running program, Mark Meadows' lawyer in the Fulton County case is Mark Oran, who decided he wanted to... who decided that he wanted to mansplain
his client's position to Fonnie Willis. And Fonnie Willis wrote back to Lawyer Moran at 6:25 a.m. Fonnie Willis does not keep banker's hours.
Oh, God, this is going to get ugly.
She wrote back to him at 6:25 a.m. and said, "Good morning, Mr. Moran. I am not granting any extensions. I gave 2 weeks for people to surrender themselves to the court. Your client is no different than any other criminal defendant in this jurisdiction." Ow, damn, that had to sting. That's like saying,
being called a criminal defendant.
Yeah, your client's no different than some dude that gets popped selling meth on the corner. The 2 weeks was a tremendous courtesy. At 12:30 p.m. on Friday, I shall file warrants in the system. My team has availability to meet to discuss reasonable consent bonds Wednesday and Thursday.
You know those warrants are already drawn up. They're just waiting to be presented to the judge for a signature.
Yeah. Friday, she's filing them at 12:30 p.m. So he can either post his damn bond or spend a little bit of time in Rice Street.
No, I would think that impeaching a witness in the Georgia case would be a lot easier. Because you lived in Atlanta. When I was in Atlanta, I kept running into Peachtree Street. Peachtree this, Peachtree that.
Right, Peachtree Pike, Peachtree Street, Peachtree Place, Peachtree Avenue.
Right, so wouldn't impeaching a witness involve burying them in peaches?
I had a T-shirt once upon a time. Said, "Meet me." This was back in my Atlanta days. Said, "Meet me on Peachtree." And then listed below it in two columns was every road named Peachtree in Atlanta. And it went from basically the top of your chest all the way down past your belly button.
That's wow.
Yeah, one of them was Peachtree Battle. That was another thoroughfare.
I think personally,
I think all those peach trees are just there to confuse the Yankees.
Well, it sure as hell confused the hell out of me. I found it a lot easier to just take a taxi instead of
because you know when Sherman came through, he didn't have any problems whatsoever getting around.
Well, he had Norman, with him, so that kind of helped.
Yeah, and some kerosene. General Sherman, is this Peachtree Place or is this Peachtree Avenue? Don't give a fuck, burn it.
It's a warehouse full of contraband goods. Whoosh. Yeah.
Well, Dave, I got to roll.
All right, Robin, you take care of yourself. And I'll tell Christine you said hi.
Do please. I hope she's well.
She is. She's doing pretty good. She started her first Tai Chi class yesterday, and she loved it. So I'll keep you guys informed. She's doing pretty good.
Good. I still want to know when y'all try the poutine. We say it like that in the South. Poutine.
Yeah, well, I will. It's a matter of getting a ride, and I have a friend who takes me around on errands. He also takes Christine around on errands. So we may just have him and his girlfriend go with us.
Yeah, treat him to some poutine.
Yeah, why not?
Every Canadian in the audience is cringing at my use of poutine.
Right, probably also your pronunciation.
That's what I meant.
God, she's butchering the word. Yeah.
I don't care how bad. I don't care how bad it gets down there. Hey, we ain't letting her in here.
I don't care how nice she is. Yeah.
All right, Dave. Have a good night, my friend.
All right, you too, Robin.
Bye.
Bye.
And here endeth the program. So we are at 14:35. We will be at 17:35 for prayer meeting Wednesday. The deacons are, well, I'm going to tell them to do some extra deep knee bends and the like, because they're not going to be sitting down. They're going to be, they'll be passing the plate all 3 hours tomorrow. Thanks, everybody. Thanks so very much for your support in whatever form it takes. Ralphs said, I wonder if Jack Smith has Mark Meadows in his hip pocket. Yes, he does. That's what that big bombshell news report in the New York Times was about today. He is cooperating. Rolling, rolling, rolling. And that's probably another, you know, that's probably a cause for another case of ketchup on the wall down at Mogaloco. But thanks, everybody. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you. To our a la carte contributors, thank you so very much. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Roger, in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Remember, like and subscribe to the podcast, please. Leave a comment. Tell your friends and neighbors what a remarkable little conversation we've got going on here. I'd love to build this community and add more voices to the conversation. It'd be magnificent. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. I'm a little worried about why the White Rose Society's website is down. It went down, I think, yesterday. It may be gone for good. Ben Birch has literally served out billions and billions of hours of progressive talk radio. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe, everybody. Get your booster if you can. There's a weird-ass, rapidly mutating strain of COVID out there. I'd be interested to hear from Paul from Parts Unknown if he has any particular insights about that. Wear your mask around the maggots. They don't give a damn about anybody but themselves, and they don't think much of themselves either. You can't if you're willing to die for an orange demented circus peanut. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse, maintain your social distance. It's still a good idea. And you know, if a former White House chief of staff says, all I did was try to overturn the coup, why do I have to post bond? Well, avoid Mark Meadows like the plague. Because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.